Good morning once again, brothers and sisters. Kentucky Bible School, day two. I also find myself running a little bit behind, so the train that Brother James talked about is, we're on it and it's moving. Aliens and strangers, that at that time you were without Christ, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel, and thus strangers from the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world. That's a very sobering verse. If you're a stranger from the covenants of promise, then you don't know anything about them. I see a stranger in an airport or driving down the road. What do I know about that person? Absolutely nothing. The same could be said for the stranger from the commonwealth. If you are an alien from the covenant, then you have no part of that covenant. This covenant of God's is one you want to be a part of, for it has benefits to those who are legally within the covenant. If you're not part of the covenant, then you are without hope and consequently without God. Here we see Peter confirms the great and precious promises. It is through these great promises that we hope to partake of that divine nature we just read in the fourth verse, whereby we are given unto us the great and precious promises, that by these ye might be partakers of the divine nature, having escaped the corruption that is in the world through lust. Paul, when before King Agrippa, Paul thanked him and recognized the king's knowledge, adding that he was an expert of the Jewish customs in question. And further we read in Acts 26 and 6, and now I stand and am judged for the hope of the promise made of God unto our fathers. It's not unusual when in discussions about the Bible with a friend or with a stranger for that matter, that when we talk about the promises to Abraham, yesterday as I considered them to be our building blocks from whence we build our life in the truth, it is assumed incorrectly that these are made only to the Jews and not to the Gentiles also. The Old Testament may be referred to as a collection of stories that have no bearing on believers today, because Christ is the way. As long as we love our fellow man, nothing more is needed, and I'm also saved. I'm going to make a jump here to lay more foundation to the way in which we receive salvation. The blood of the everlasting covenant, Hebrews 13 and 20. Now the God of peace that brought again from the dead our Lord Jesus, that great shepherd of the sheep, through the blood of the everlasting covenant. One who's not familiar with the necessity of studying the Old Testament may ask these questions. What does the blood have to do with being saved? Sacrifices ended in the Old Testament. There's no connection at all. The blood of the everlasting covenant is something we'll be addressing a little later. The reason for the verse just read is for the introduction of the necessity of blood and the role it plays in the covenant. Let's go back to see how the covenant with Abraham was different than many of the other covenants. Salvation wasn't based solely upon the law, nor was it derived from the sacrifices that were contained within the law. The law simply brought one to the knowledge that there was something better in the law. The law simply brought one to the knowledge that there was something better than the law, and the Son of God was indeed that something better. Jesus was the perfection of the law with its sacrifices and feasts meant to atone for sin. These couldn't permanently save or atone. But obedience to the law and faith in the coming Messiah, Savior, Christ, can save one from death. Add to that the essential mercy and grace we must receive at the judgment seat, for we indeed are all sinners and fall short. Abraham's faith. And he believed in the Lord, and he, God, counted it to him for righteousness. The importance of what Abraham asks and God's answer is what makes this covenant so important. It was faith that God counted to him for righteousness or justification. Abram's mind and heart was at work, however. He was yet to do any physical work. It shows by example that no works could merit the salvation of the human race. The cutting, first cutting of the covenant. What makes the covenant with Abraham different than those covenants in the past? Recall the Hebrew word karat, berit, berith, we mentioned earlier or yesterday, which means to cut a covenant. The following is a quote which sheds more insight into the practice. I'm sorry I did not write down my source as early as I did. I had new papers all over and neglected to do that. But in the Old Testament, the English phrase, make a covenant, is most often a translation of the Hebrew karat bereth, which literally means cut a covenant. The verb karat means cut off, cut down, and the noun berit means covenant, similar in meaning to the words pact, compact, treaty, alliance, and league. Karat occurs 90 times in the Hebrew Bible in reference to making covenants. In a few of these instances, only karat is found in the Hebrew text. The King James translators added covenant so the English text would make more sense. The Hebrew wording of cutting a covenant is an important part of the understanding of our Creator, His people, and where we fit into those covenants. Certainly, this natural wording is used metaphorically in some cases, but more importantly, it seems to reflect ancient covenant-making practices. In today's world, a contract often becomes legally binding when the party signed a contract detailing the terms of that contract. Although, and having been in sales, or still in sales, although to curtail unscrupulous salespeople, today we have a 3-day, typically a right of rescission. That is, even though signed by both parties, the buyer can back out with generally all monies being returned to him. Words we do hear frequently, like a deal was cut, or I'm going to cut a deal, and striking a bargain, appears to have come into English from the wording of ancient covenant-making practices involving animal sacrifices. We read that at least one animal was sacrificed, cut into pieces, and someone or something passed between them. Let's turn to the book of Genesis. The 15th chapter. And I'm going to begin reading at the 7th verse through the remainder of the chapter. And he said unto him, I am the Lord that brought you out of Ur of the Chaldees to give this land to inherit it. To inherit it. And God is, of course, speaking to Abram. And he said, Lord God, whereby shall I know that I shall inherit it? And he said unto him, take me an heifer of 3 years old, and a she-goat of 3 years old, and a ram of 3 years old, and a turtle dove, and a young pigeon. And he took unto him all these, and divided them in the midst, and laid each piece one against the other. But the birds he divided not. And when the fowls came down upon the carcasses, Abram drove them away. And when the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abram, and lo, an horror of great darkness fell upon him. And he said unto Abram, know of a surety that thy seed shall be a stranger in the land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. And also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge, and afterwards shall they come out with great substance. And thou shalt go to thy fathers in peace, thou shalt be buried in a good old age. But in the fourth generation they shall come hither again, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full. And it came to pass that when the sun went down and it was dark, behold, a smoking furnace and a burning lamp that passed between those pieces. In the same day the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, unto thy seed have I given this land, from the river of Egypt unto the great river, the river Euphrates. And I think, brothers and sisters, we can end there. The Lord came to Abraham in a vision, to which it was accounted Abraham that he believed in the Lord, and God counted it unto him for righteousness. And then God reaffirms that it was he that brought him out of the Ur of the Chaldees to give him this land. The next question is one that I believe shows the human side of not only Abraham in the Bible, but many of the Bible characters. And this is the human nature that not only we have, but they have as well. What does Abram do? Realizing his age, realizing that he is childless. Abraham asked for a sign in verse 8. It wasn't because of a lack of faith that Yahweh would do this. Rather, he was asking, when would he inherit the land, as he was still childless? So now God expands the covenant, and this expansion, we see what's in store within this expansion, what's in store for the godly as well as the ungodly. The one making the sacrifice, when they would put their hand on the head of the animal, when it was killed, they should understand that it was them that deserved to die by the letting of blood and the death of the animal. The sacrificial animal was to be the best of the flock, as Christ was the best of all mankind. Without blemish, as Christ was without the blemish of sin by commission, but carrying the sinful flesh inherited through his mother. It should have been understood that you give only your best unto God. How, when we think back of in the garden, how would Cain have expressed this lesson, or what did he think that he was going to do? Place his hand upon the vegetables or food that he was going to offer? Were they a proper sacrifice for sin, or simply what he grew and what he thought was the right thing to do? His pride was in doing things his way and not as God had provided or intended. However, God expands the message with a covenant direction. Brother John Thomas refers to the Abrahamic covenant as a divine legal instrument, different than just a simple sacrifice. Each of the animals was 3 years old, the heifer, The she-goat and the ram were animals approved for sacrifices going forward. In addition, the turtle doves and young pigeons were also used for sacrifices from this point forward, however, not in this case. Each of the animals were cut in half, with the exception of the birds. Abraham then proceeded to wait for the Lord, protecting the two rows of carcasses of the dead animals from scavenging birds. He then falls into a deep sleep in which he experiences a horror of great darkness. In Genesis 15 and 12, which reads, "And when the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abram, and lo, a horror of great darkness fell upon him." Could the pieces of the animal already sacrificed be put back together? No. And at this point, neither could the covenant be changed or made void. God details future events that would involve his posterity's future, including their bondage in Egypt, eventually deliverance, and a return to Canaan after some 400 years. And finally, his experience culminated with God giving Abraham a dramatic sign. Abram, a dramatic sign. So what do we have here? God creates the covenant and tells what was needed for the covenant. And further is the smoking furnace and burning lamp that represented God's presence, compares to the cloud and pillar of fire that accompanied Israel years later. This is the last time the seed is referring to Abraham. After this, seed is singular, as it is about the singular seed of Christ and not solely of Abraham or of the Jews. Pillar of cloud, pillar of fire. Exodus 13. Verses 21 and 22. "And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of a cloud to lead them the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, to go by day and night. He took not away the pillar of the cloud by day, nor the pillar of fire by night from before the people." And as you might imagine, you've got somewhere near 2 million people in tents, pitch dark. How that light representing God would have a effect on them. "For those coming out of Egypt and seeing the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire," as we're reminded when reading scriptures of different events, "they should have recalled the cutting of the covenant with Abram and the smoking furnace along with the burning lamp." Was God telling Abram by passing through the divided animals? Recall that the individual sacrificing of the best of his flock, representing how he should be presenting himself, and it was he who deserved to die. Thus, the implication is that the Lord passed between the divided animals and, in effect, by doing this, swore an oath, as he could swear by none greater than himself, that would be given Abraham and his seed, that he would be given Abraham and his seed the land of inheritance. This idea is supported by God's later revelation, wherein he confirmed the same promise of land to Isaac and then to Jacob. And the points with the confirming of the promises: the clean animals pointed forward towards the law of Moses. Abraham's posterity would become slaves in Egypt and later return to Canaan after 400 years. The smoking furnace and burning lamp represented God's presence, a foreshadow of the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire during the Exodus. The five different clean animals used for sacrifices under the law of Moses are seen as the whole house of Israel. And since birds of prey are seen as unclean in the law of Moses, they represent the oppressive foreign nations that will attempt to devour Abraham's seed. Continuing with the symbolism, Abraham's descendants, in the form of sacrificial animals, protected by the Abrahamic providence, promises from attacks by foreigners or birds of prey, after Abram's falling asleep, the Lord, the smoking pot with the torch of fire, will walk amongst them. We should consider these three verses, along with Genesis 15 and 17, Psalms 119, I got ahead of myself. Consider these verses along with Genesis 15 and 17, Psalms 119, 105. Thy word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. Isaiah 48 and 10. Behold, I have refined thee, but not with silver. I have chosen thee in the furnace of affliction. In other words, the testing to prove us. Romans 11 and 22. Behold, the goodness and severity of God on them which fell, severity, but toward thee goodness. Otherwise, thou shalt be cut off. And it may go without saying that what was presented to the people is that they had a choice. We have that same choice today. You either follow or you go your own way. Isaiah 62 and 1. For Zion's sake will I not hold my peace, and for Jerusalem's sake I will not rest, until the righteousness thereof go forth as brightness, and the salvation thereof as a lamp that burneth. Psalms 21, 8 and 9. Thy right hand shall find out those that hate thee. Thou shalt make them as a fiery oven in the time of thine anger. The Lord shall swallow them up in his wrath, and the fire shall devour them. And lastly, Malachi 4 and 1. Behold, the day cometh that shall burn as an oven, and all the proud, yea, all that do wickedly shall be stubble. And the day that cometh shall burn them up, saith the Lord of hosts, that it shall leave them neither root nor branch. Zedekiah, we'll do a slight transformation now from the covenant with Abraham and see how these tie in. Jeremiah 34, 8 and 9 is the covenant to proclaim liberty, and Jeremiah 34, 17 through 22. And let's turn to Jeremiah. This is the word that came unto Jeremiah from the Lord. After that, the king Zedekiah had made a covenant with all the people which were in Jerusalem to proclaim liberty unto them, that every man should let his manservant and every man his maidservant, being in Hebrew for an Hebrewess, go free, that none should serve himself of them, to wit, of a Jew, his brother. Now when all the princes and all the people which had entered into the covenant heard that very one should let his servant and every one his maidservant go free, that none should serve themselves of them any more, then they obeyed and they let them go. But afterward they turned and caused the servants and the handmaids whom they had let go free to return and brought them into subjection for servants and for handmaids. Therefore the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah from the Lord, saying, Thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel, I made a covenant with your fathers in the day that I brought them forth out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondmen, saying, At the end of 7 years, let ye go every man his brother, in Hebrew, which hath been sold unto thee. And when he hath served thee 6 years, thou shalt let him go free from thee. But your fathers have hearkened not unto me, neither inclined thy ear. But ye were now turned, and had done right in my sight in proclaiming liberty every man to his neighbor, and ye had made a covenant before me in the house which is called by my name. But ye turned and polluted my name, and caused every man his servant and every man his handmaid, whom ye had set at liberty at their pleasure, to return and brought them into subjection to be unto you for servants and for handmaids. Therefore thus saith the Lord, Ye have not hearkened unto me in proclaiming liberty, every one to his brother and every man to his neighbor. Behold, I proclaim a liberty for you, saith the Lord, to the sword, to the pestilence, and to the famine, and I will make you to be removed into all the kingdoms of the earth. And I will give the men that have transgressed my covenant, which have not performed the words of the covenant which they had made before me, when they cut the calf in twain and passed between the parts thereof. So we have a mirror in Jeremiah of the covenant with Abraham. The animals were cut in two. The people passed between the animals, and it was the same as signing a covenant. There was an agreement at that point, irrevocable. The princes of Judah and the princes of Jerusalem, the eunuchs and the priests and all the people of the land, which passed between the parts of the calf, I will even give them into the hand of their enemies and into the hand of them that seek their life, and their dead bodies shall be for meat unto the fowls of the heaven and to the beasts of the earth. And Zedekiah, king of Judah, and his princes will I give unto thee, the hand of their enemies, and unto the hand of them that seek their life, and unto the hand of the king of Babylon's army, which are gone up from you. Behold, I will command, saith the Lord, and cause them to return to the city, and they shall fight against it, and take it, and burn it with fire. And I will make the cities of Judah a desolation without an inheritance. Zedekiah and the people of Judah, about 590 years before Christ. There's some points that I want to make with the covenant between Zedekiah and the people of Judah. The words read come into effect again with Jeremiah and Zedekiah. King Zedekiah had made a covenant. There were sacrifices made. The people passed between the sacrifices. And then the people changed their minds. They went back on their word. They, in effect, attempted to make the covenant that they made null and void. They broke their covenant, and they died as a result. Notice here that King Zedekiah had made a covenant, but as verse 18 says, men transgressed not Zedekiah's covenant, but as verse 18 says, transgressed my covenant, meaning God's covenant. It was God's. The word of God came to Zedekiah, and after those words, he then made a covenant with the people. In addition, it's possible that each person neared Abraham in Genesis 14 and 22 when he refused a reward of King Sodom in verse 22 of Genesis 14. How about Genesis 14 and 22? And Abram said to the king of Sodom, I have lifted up mine hand unto the Lord, the Most High God, the possessor of heaven and earth. According to Weingreen's Practical Grammar for Classical Hebrew, page 182, that the practice today of swearing in of government officials and witnesses who testify in court is very possibly because of the example of Abraham's oath to God that was demonstrated by the raising of his hand. And we see that in every, not that I'm in courtrooms, but if you're watching a TV show or a movie, the man or the woman comes forward, they put their hand on the Bible, and they raise their right hand. Is it necessary to raise your right hand if your hand is on the Bible and you're asked to so affirm what you're going to say is true, but nonetheless, the right hand is raised? Second, the individual possibly repeated a phrase similar to self-curses in which a person said, God do to me and more also, signifying that the individual expected to be cursed if they did not live up to their oath. This self-curse formula is attested to from the 11th to the 18th centuries B.C. among Israelites. Eli said this to Samuel when asking what the Lord had told him about his wicked sons in 1 Samuel, the 3rd chapter, verses 8 through 18. God do so to thee, and more also, if thou hide anything from me of all these things that he said unto thee. David also uses the phrase in 2 Samuel 3 and 35, upon the death of Abner, that he would eat no meat until the sun be down. Solomon speaks of his brother Adonijah's request to marry elderly King David's nurse in 1 Kings 2 and 23. Then King Solomon, swear by the Lord, saying, God, do so to me and more also, if Adonijah had not spoken this word against his own wife. And the non-Israelite Ruth, we're in the book of Ruth in our Thursday night Bible class in Denver. Ruth told her mother-in-law, Naomi, after whither thou goest, I will go. Whither thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God, my God. In Ruth 1 and 17, the Lord, do so to me, and more also, if aught but death part thee and me. These actions seem to be linked to covenant-cutting oaths that were imagery of divided animals, was invoked as the consequence for violating the agreement. Thus, it is not unreasonable to think that Zedekiah and others of his people passed between the halves of the slaughtered calf, raised their hand, and possibly said something to the effect, God, so do to us and more also if we keep not the terms of this covenant that we just ratified by walking between the animals that had been cut in half. Regrettably, the people were not true to the covenant that they had made and ended up suffering greatly. This graphically demonstrates how serious the Lord views covenants with his people, making and the devastating consequences of violating those covenants. Now that we've analyzed the two more prominent incidents of covenant cutting in the Old Testament, I want to look at some events that represent a shadow of the makeup of God's covenants. And that the covenant of circumcision that we find in Genesis 17, verses 10 through 14. Every male child shall be circumcised, a token of the covenant between God and Abraham. On the eighth day, born or bought, the covenant in your flesh for an everlasting covenant. And on the other side of that is the uncircumcised that would be cut off, for the covenant has been broken. Circumcision became the token of the Abrahamic covenant during Old Testament times, and those who were circumcised enjoyed the privileges and undertook the responsibilities of the covenant. The following is from the Bible Dictionary. Circumcision was part of the covenant, perhaps further a ratification of the covenant, and that the symbolic signification of circumcision is the same as that of the divided victims of sacrifices. The association is supported in Genesis 17 and 14. The cutting off of the foreskin is the covenant making, and the uncircumcised are cut off. So we have the cutting off of the foreskin, and if you don't, then the breaking of the covenant and thus being cut off. The Sinai covenant in Exodus, the 34th chapter, and we're going to see, recall the separation that almost from the entirety of the Bible, that man is to separate themselves from the world. You are to separate yourself from sin or sinful situations. So there's a consistent separating here, the separating of the animals, the passing through it, and that this is the theme between now and the end of our class this morning. And the Lord said unto Moses, hew thee two tables of stone like the first, and I will write upon these tablets the words that were in the first tablets which thou breakest. And the word hew here is to cut. The Sinai covenant contains a cutting, as the word hew is used in Exodus 34 and 1. Cut two tablets of stone like the first one. Your Bible may read hew, which is Strong's word 648, pethel, meaning to cut or to hew. And I feel another example of the covenant cutting. Moses offers sacrifices and divides in half the people and the altar, Exodus 24. Three through eight. And while I'm looking for that, to let's see this. And Moses came and told the people all the words of the Lord and all the judgments, and all the people answered with one voice and said, all the words which the Lord has said, we will do. And Moses wrote all the words of the Lord and rose up early in the morning and builded an altar under the hill and 12 pillars according to the 12 tribes of Israel. And he sent young men of the children of Israel, which offered burnt offerings and sacrificed peace offerings of oxen unto the Lord. And Moses took half, or divided it, half of the blood, and put it in basins, and half of the blood he sprinkled on the altar. And he took the book of the covenant and read in the audience of the people, and they said, all that the Lord hath said, we will do and be obedient. Another form of a covenant in that we have a party number one, party number two agreed to that covenant. We read that Moses wrote down the Lord's judgments, built an altar, and instructed that the oxen be slaughtered for burnt and peace offerings. Possibly these were just concerning the blessings and the cursings that were written on each tablet. It makes no difference which was on the right hand or the left, but one with the blessings if the people do this, and the cursings if the people don't do that. And he took the book of the covenant and read in the audience of the people, and they said, all that the Lord has said we will do. Be ye separate. This is the repeating message from God. They are to be called out. They are to be a called out people, holy, separate unto the Lord. In other words, they signed the contract. They agreed with the covenant. And Moses took the blood and sprinkled it on the people and said, behold, the blood of the covenant which the Lord hath made or cut with you concerning all these words. An atonement in Exodus 24, 6 and 8. The sacrificial blood to cover over sprinkled people that were in covenant. Now the people were subject to the blessings and the cursings. Since the intensive form of the Hebrew word karat means cover over, and is often translated make an atonement, the sprinkling of the people with the sacrificial blood seems to indicate they were covered with the blood of Christ and protected by his atonement. In addition, the sprinkling of half of the blood on the altar and the other half on the people reminds us of the animals divided in half in Genesis 15 of the covenant made with Abraham. It appears this was a symbolic action in which the people were identified again with the sacrificial animals, so that the fate of the animal is presented as the fate to be expected by the people if they violated their sacred promise. Therefore, the sacrificial animal can be seen as typifying Christ, who blesses the obedient by vicariously taking the curses of disobedience and sin upon himself. He becomes the sacrificial animal, the lamb without blemish, perfect for a sacrifice. He was what God expected his son to be, the best of the flock. Thus, the symbolism of the covenant ritual appears to have been twofold: blessings for obedience, curses for disobedience. This idea is consistent with the many blessings and curses of the covenant recorded later in the 28th chapter of Deuteronomy. Not surprisingly, one of these curses echoes the slaughtered animals. "And thy carcass shall be meat unto all the fowls of the air and unto the beasts of the earth." Deuteronomy 28:26. "Today I set before you a blessing and a curse. A blessing if you obey, a curse if you disobey." And we will continue, brothers and sisters, Lord willing, we will continue tomorrow. Thank you.